This thing, man.
Good evening. I'd like to call the January 4th, 2022 Tompkins County Legislature
Recording
meeting to order.
In progress.
If you would please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, one flag, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
I will now take roll call. Shauna Black.
Here.
Travis Crook.
Here.
Randy Brown.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John. Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Greg Mezzi.
Here.
Veronica Pillar.
Here.
Lee Shirtless.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
We have 13 members present. The first order of business this evening is the administering of the oath of office to all legislators, and I'd like to introduce Maureen Reynolds, the Tompkins County Clerk, to administer that oath.
Raise your right hand, please. I swear that you will support the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of New York, and that you will faithfully discharge the duties of Tompkins County Legislature to the rest of your votes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations to all of you.
Thank you, Maureen, and congratulations, everyone. The next order of business is the election of a temporary chair, and I will now open the floor for nominations. Deborah Dawson?
Yes, thank you, Kathy. It's my pleasure to nominate Dan Klein as our temporary chair.
Okay. Is there a second? Mike Lane?
Happy to second that. Dan's a stalwart member of our legislature, and he'll do a good job for us.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations? Moved by Deborah Dawson, seconded by Ann Corman. I will do a roll call vote on closing the nominations. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John? Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shirtless?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
We have 13 ayes, 0 noes. Dan Klein? Oh, I'm sorry, we have to vote on the temporary chair. I will now do a roll call vote on temporary chair for Dan Klein. Shauna Black?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John? Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shirtless?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
We have 13 ayes, 0 noes. Dan Klein, you're elected temporary chair.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, everybody. You know, I'm thinking about a phrase that Leslyn McBean Claiborne used sometimes. Leslyn, who last occupied this seat. I feel it in my bones that we are at a good transition here, a good positive transition in this legislature. And I'm really glad to be part of this positive, good transition. So with that in mind, are there any nominations from the floor for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature for 2022? Ann Corman.
I'd like to nominate Shauna Black. Could I say a few words now?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I am nominating my colleague and friend, Shauna Black, to be our 2022 Tompkins County Legislative Chairperson. Shauna's leadership skills were honed prior to becoming a legislator, including experience as the executive director of a senior living facility. Many people don't know that soon after Shauna was elected in November of 2017, she was sworn in as a county legislator to fill a vacant seat. Unlike most of the other freshman legislators, she was assigned the responsibility of chairing a committee, our county's Health and Human Services Committee, which she has skillfully and compassionately continued to chair for over 4 years. Issues Legislator Black has worked on include rebuilding our Human Rights Commission, addressing the opioid crisis, public and mental health, mass transportation, homelessness, youth services, and public safety reform, including alternatives to incarceration. In 2019, Shauna was elected by her legislative colleagues to serve as our vice chair. We subsequently re-elected her to be vice chair for 2020 and 2021. These last 2 years have been extremely challenging for all of us as we navigated through this pandemic and renewed our efforts in social justice. And we have greatly benefited from Shauna's position in leadership. In the words of Leslyn McBean Claiborne, our previous legislative chair, who she worked side by side with, Shauna is even-handed and understands how to balance the needs of staff and residents with policy. She is always willing to roll up her sleeves and do the heavy lifting necessary and at the same time manage conflicting challenges by being straightforward. Another admirable quality of Shauna is that she is not afraid to say, "I don't know," rather than take on a task under false pretenses of knowledge or ability. Shauna and her wife, Margot, are raising 3 wonderful children. On a daily basis, they are in touch with the joys and challenges of caring for a family in Tompkins County, especially the extra challenges that this pandemic brings. If elected, Shauna Black would be the first openly LGBTQ+ person to chair our county legislature. Shauna does not see herself as a trailblazer, as she has said, "I'm just a regular person helping my fellow county residents and trying to be a good role model for my children." She is, however, a trailblazer for young parents, women, and the LGBTQ+ community. I ask my colleagues to join me in voting for legislator Shauna Black to be our chairperson for 2022.
Thank you, Ann. Is there a second for Shauna? Mike Sigler.
I would like to second that nomination for Shauna for chairperson. I'll say a few words too. I'm sorry, I fiddle with this thing a little bit. It's always great to see someone who really grows into something. And I think when Shauna first took on this job, you know, like anybody, she goes into it not really kind of knowing what the job will entail. And yet to be able to grow so quickly, to be able to chair a committee and just to be a good legislator is really kind of a remarkable feat. And she was definitely able to do that. And I think a lot of the reason that she's able to do that is because she governs from a position of kindness. And I think that's something that's missing a lot in the world, is that sense of kindness. And if you kind of govern from that position, you can create good policy. I also think that she is able to balance a number of different things. And this is the reason I'm seconding this this nomination, is she's able to balance the needs of her constituents, because she knows who elects her. So she's able to balance the needs of those constituents with also the needs of the greater county, which is a large area and a lot of competing views and a lot of competing needs. And she's able to get to a good middle ground and address all those needs. And again, with the balance, it was mentioned, she has a wonderful home life, and she's able to balance that home life with all the legislative duties, which can be, you know, a lot. And she's able to balance that home life and keep that intact with wonderful children and a wonderful wife, and balance that against her work life, which is just a pleasure to see. She's also able to listen to opposing views and not just listen to them and give them, you know, "Yeah, that's great. Thanks for checking in." She's able to listen to those views and pick out the parts that she might agree with and adopt the best path forward, regardless of where it comes from. And that's a rare gift. And again, a reason I think she will definitely be able to succeed in this leadership position. You know, it was mentioned that she doesn't see her, or she sees herself as a regular person and not a trailblazer. I frankly think that seeing yourself as a regular person is maybe something that's a bit of a trailblazing kind of thing, at least in today's world. I wish we had more regular people governing us who really understand those kitchen table issues. And she's definitely one of those people. So I'm glad that there will be a regular person leading us here at the Tompkins County Legislature. So congratulations, Shauna, for the nomination.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Are there any other nominations from the floor for chair? Okay, seeing none, we need to vote to close nominations?
We need a motion first.
Okay, is there somebody that would move to, Deborah moves to close nominations? Rich seconds, thank you. Any discussion about closing nominations? Okay, let's have a vote.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
14 ayes, zero noes.
Okay, the nominations are closed. Then we can proceed to a vote on Shauna.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison? Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
14 ayes, zero noes.
Made a longer speech.
Thank you so much, everyone. I am going to move us along to the vice chair speech or the vice chair vote, and then I will offer a very short speech. Okay. Can I have a motion to open the nomination for vice chair? Just open it. Ann Corman, if I could have a.
Oh, you want to just nominate?
They can just to nominate. Seconded by Rich.
Now you want to put a nomination on a name on the floor.
Oh, sorry.
Nominations.
If we could put a nomination on the floor. Amanda.
Thank you. I would like to nominate Deborah Dawson as our vice chair. Deborah is one of the hardest working people I know. Over the last 4 years, I have gotten to know her pretty well, I think. I've served on numerous committees with her, watching her lead some of those committees, listening to her advocate for numerous environmental issues, amongst other issues, and seeing her grow and change throughout it. Deborah is not afraid to say what she thinks, but she's also not afraid to own up to her mistakes or change her mind based on new information or evidence. I appreciate this very much about Deborah. Deborah is a team player, and I believe she will be even more of an asset to this legislature as one of its leaders. And this is why I nominate Deborah Dawson for our vice chair.
Thank you.
Rich John.
If I might offer a second to that nomination, I have known Deborah since she joined the legislature in 2017 and have seen her grow and assume more and more responsibility. I agree entirely with Amanda's comment that Deborah Dawson will tell you where she is at and very clearly. I believe she is ready, willing, and able to fulfill the duties of the vice chair. She's demonstrated real ability to run meetings. Particularly, I think about our just completed budget cycle, which with the pandemic was a very complicated, difficult, and at times argumentative process, and Deborah got us in line and got us to get to our decisions in a orderly way. And we finished our budget on time and in agreement, which was a really good thing. I look forward to having Deborah serve as our vice chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Can I have a motion to close nominations? Mike Lane. And let's do a roll call to nominate, to elect.
Amanda seconding that motion.
Yeah, seconding.
Okay.
Thank you, Amanda. Let's do a roll call to elect Deborah Dawson as the vice chair.
We have to close nominations.
Oh, sorry about that. We do this once a year. Can I have a nomination to close?
Roll call to close nominations. For Annie, right? And then Rich. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, zero noes.
Okay. Now is the opportunity to vote for Deborah Dawson. I've been waiting all night to say this, for vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature for the year of 2022. Let's do a roll call.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, zero noes.
Thank you.
Deborah, would you like to say a few words?
Well, for once, I'm at a loss for words. I just promise to do the best I can. I will probably still tell you exactly what I think, but don't take it personally. And I'm looking forward to working as part of the team and playing Robin to Shauna's Batman. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Congratulations. Okay. I would like to start off by thanking Kathy Covert and Dan Klein for starting our meeting. I'd also like to thank Ann Corman and Mike Sigler for moving and seconding my nomination. Those were absolutely incredible speeches, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Really appreciate it. I'm honored to be chosen by you, my colleagues, to be the chair of this incredible legislature. The past 4 years have been a roller coaster of sorts, with a very steep learning curve in the beginning and some very crazy turns over the past 2 years. As we embark upon the upcoming year, we will continue to be challenged by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, we will need to create a new normal moving forward and work towards a life with COVID to create goals and purpose for our county government. I'm proud of the past success this legislature has had. Tompkins County has been and will continue to be a leader in the state for our pandemic response, alternatives to incarceration, shared services, and the list goes on and on. I'm not going to get into great depth during this speech, as I'm already working on the State of the County speech for our next meeting. However, we will continue to invest in our employees with a salary study, which will take place this year. Our employees are what make the work we do at the county so valuable and important. Day in and day out, our employees come to work ready to serve our community. Words cannot express how grateful I am for their loyalty and dedication. I'm happy to report that we are now in contract with Blue Collar, White Collar, and Road Patrol, and there will hopefully be others to follow. As a county, we will continue to prioritize equity and diversity in our organization with the hiring of our Chief Equity and Diversity Officer, continuing the Workforce Development and Inclusion Committee, and with the important work of the Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Committee, we strive to be a workplace of choice where everyone feels welcome and safe. We will continue to work on the quality and effectiveness of our committee and legislature meetings. I've heard some feedback from both legislators and staff about the length of our meetings. While I will not put limits on the time legislators can speak, I hope that we can all be mindful and respectful of each other and our time and patience. I will ask my colleagues to have crisp comments so that our meetings are an efficient use of everyone's time. 2021 committees should continue to meet in January, with new legislators serving in the place of the legislators they have replaced. I will send out an email with those assignments and meeting times so there is no confusion. Over the next week, the Vice Chair and I will reach out to each of you and schedule one-on-one meetings to discuss your individual goals and preferences for committees. More to follow via email. Personally, I'd like to thank my wife, Margot. After 25 years together, I'm thankful I have a supportive partner who is easily talked into home ownership, animal caretaker, and even parenthood. I'd also like to send a shout out to my kids, Graham, Emerson, and Keen. Thank you for forgiving me after I missed your choir concert and your kindergarten orientation. I'm also thankful you decided to take a shower today and wear nice clothes. It's the little things, right? I'm so proud of the kind and generous little people you are growing up to be. I'm excited for the 5 new legislators that have joined us this year. Welcome, Travis Brooks, Veronica Piller, Randy Brown, Lee Shurtleff, and Greg Meese. I have met with each of you, and I'm so impressed by the education, experience, and commitment that each of you will bring to this body. We have some big tasks ahead of us, which include governing in a global pandemic, hiring a county administrator, delivering recovery funds to our community, a possible jail renovation, reimagining public safety, and most importantly, being accountable to our constituents. Thank you for selecting me as your chair. I promise to work hard for you and the people of Tompkins County. Thank you. Okay, let's start off. And number 4, presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. We have none. Moving on to number 5, announcements of executive session and reordering business. We will have an executive session this evening for the purpose of contract negotiations. And I would like to open it up for privilege of the floor for the public. Were there any comment cards, emails, or is anyone here for public comment?
We had 2 requests. I don't know if they've joined us or not.
Only one has joined us so far, and that's Zach Wynn, and I think he's on as a panelist now for you.
Okay.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Hello, Mr. Wynn. Yes, we hear you.
Thank you. My name is Zachary Wynn. I live here in Ithaca, and I'd like to ask the new legislature to please speak out and oppose the mask and vaccine mandates. I have recently had to leave my job because I refuse to work in a mask or participate in a surveillance testing regime, one that I find to be intrusive to my personal private health and information and completely unnecessary. I now find myself unable to work anywhere here in town and unable to support myself. And I want you folks to know that I hold you personally responsible. I have nothing better to do with my time than to pursue a resolution to this situation. I would also like to ask some of the new members of the legislature, Veronica Piller, specifically, the people that helped put her into this office from Ithaca Pantheris, the Ithaca Tenants Union, and various other local far-left organizations have made it a habit to show up at the homes of local officials who they disagree with, from Mayor Svante Mirek, who they doxed and then forced to move, to the mayor of Dryden and Seth Murtaugh of the Common Council, who recently left. Is that an effective tactic? And do you think it's an appropriate way to communicate with your public officials? I'm asking Veronica this specifically. Do you think it would be appropriate for someone, say me, to start showing up at your homes to express my thoughts about the lockdowns, the various decisions that the legislature has made? Because, again, I state I am not able to work because of the illegal mask and vaccine mandates, the unconstitutional ones. And now that I have nothing better to do with my time, I'm curious if the only way to actually get across to you folks is to start showing up at your homes or places of business or who knows. I'm learning from the Ithaca Tenants Union. I'm learning from the Ithaca Democratic Socialists, and I am learning from, the Ithaca Pantheras Tenants Union, all of them. So that is my question. I'm specifically calling on all of you to call for the end of the mask and vaccine mandates. This supposed crisis could end overnight if you decided to allow it to end. You are so tied to this crisis, it has kept you from acknowledging and dealing with other actual real problems. The epidemic of overdoses of fentanyl that is very much a problem here in the community, now the number one cause of death nationwide. I have not heard you folks talk about that very much. COVID all the time. Let's talk about the overdoses, the ones that occur even in the park outside of the legislature chambers. This happens very often.
Mr. Nguyen, can you wrap it up, please?
Thank you very much for your time. I would like an answer to my question about showing up to public officials' homes. Is that an acceptable tactic to use? Veronica Piller, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on to municipal officials. Oh, George McGonigal from the city of Ithaca. Welcome to our meeting. Hey, George, you're on mute.
How about now?
You're good.
So believe it or not, I totally goofed this up. I thought you were all on Zoom. Otherwise, I would have joined you. I don't really have much to report tonight. I was eager to see the pomp and ceremony, and I'd just like to congratulate the new members and if you have any questions for me, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Thank you, George. George is a council member for the city of Ithaca. And if there are any questions from legislators to George, he would be happy to take those. Dan Klein?
Hey, George, not a question, a comment. Just want to remind you / the city that we are in the midst of the redistricting process, that our redistricting commission has started meeting already, and that it would be really great if the city and the county could be aligned on this. So just another plug, hoping the city will start soon on this. Thank you.
Okay, point taken. I know that I doubt very much that the city's in favor of switching to 4 wards, so I would encourage you to switch to 15 members. But I'll get more input from the rest of council.
Thank you, George. Mike Lane?
Hi, George. Nice to see you again here. I was very disappointed to see the action by council reported removing from your budget the $15,000 for Tompkins County Public Library. I hope that you folks at the city will reconsider that because certainly the city gets a lot of service. The residents of the city get a lot of service out of the location of the library, and I think for you to give a small amount of $15,000 is relatively small compared to the city budget, I think is not too much to ask.
Mike, you can voice your displeasure directly towards me, because I was very much opposed to that $15,000. As you know, city taxpayers pay county taxes. And in addition to that, we pay part of our sales tax revenue specifically towards the library. So I guess I was confused as to why you would think we should pay $15,000 extra.
I can respond.
Sure.
Because it helps keep the library open for a lot of people, particularly people in the city, on Sundays.
I guess to me that's part of the service that the Tompkins County Library provides.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Henry Granison and then Rich John.
Yeah, George, I was wondering whether there's anything exciting on the agenda for tomorrow's meeting.
Not really. we're just getting started. We have four new members, basically five new members, because we have one who replaced Steve Smith just about a month ago. So, and we're going to be in a Zoom meeting. So we're just going to be getting to know each other. There's nothing on the planning committee's agenda. There's a few things on the city administration side of things, but it's going to be a pretty quiet agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. I will say.
Go ahead, George.
One thing that you might be interested in is the police reimagining efforts. Those are moving along. We're taking more time than we thought we would. It's a complex issue to deal with, but we may have some recommendations by the end of January.
Is this on
Henry, if we can't hear you.
Working group for public safety? Okay, is this the working group for public safety?
Yes, okay. Henry. Well, yep.
Thanks.
Amy Corman.
Thank you. George, I just wanted to make a comment again about the getting back to the library issue, that a lot of our smaller municipalities in the county have libraries, and most of those municipalities that do contribute financially to their library, and the county could put our library in any municipality in the county, and we chose, you know, a long time ago to put it here, and it does greatly benefit the residents of the city of Ithaca. So I'd just like you to reconsider for next year, some other time, that $15,000 really is in some ways it's a token, but it's also, as was said, it helps keep it open additional hours on the weekend. Thank you.
Rich John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. George, I don't want to pile on, but as another city rep, I would hope you understood just how that news that the city had taken that out of its budget was received here. And I think it was largely because of the point that Ann made, that the towns and villages look at their libraries as points of pride and they support them financially. And I know it's not a lot of money and it was symbolic, but that symbol seemed to really resonate here at the legislature. I just hope in the next budget cycle that the city might rethink that position. Just keep it in mind for the next time you see it. But that wasn't my question. The mayor had mentioned to me that there is a task force report coming out soon I believe, led by Mel Stone on West State Street and perhaps being broadened to address the camping issues. Do you know the status of that and when it might see the light of day?
Yeah, I should have mentioned that. There was a meeting today sponsored by the Continuum of Care in which Nels and Anissa explained the proposal for West State Street and for the encampments in the jungle. And basically they proposed a draft that would change the configuration of encampments in the jungle to one or two encampments, at least temporarily, and close down encampments in any other part of city-owned property. This is not finalized by any means. It's an idea that has some support with many of the organizations that are helping homeless people in this part of town. So there was a big meeting about that today. And Nels and Anissa are seeking feedback from what they presented today. And I could forward that to y'all if you would like.
Yes, please.
Okay. I'll do that tomorrow.
Are there any other questions for George? I see no other hands. Thank you very much, George, for joining us.
Thank you, and congratulations. Congratulations, Shauna, and I hope you all have a great meeting.
Thank you. Take care. Okay, next, I would like to open up the privilege of the floor for legislators.
And Deborah, too. Congratulations, Deborah.
Thank you, George. And since we have five new people here, if we can actually go around and introduce yourself and tell us what district you represent in the area so that our viewers have a new idea who their representatives are. Mike, you want to start?
Happy to. Mine's the, I guess, the last district. It's District 14, which is the eastern part of the town of Dryden, including both the villages of Dryden and Freeville. We've been an important part of Tompkins County for a long time. Actually, Dryden pre-existed before Ulysses. And I think it's important that that section of our county is adequately represented. And I'm pleased that the voters in my district chose me to continue on the legislature for the next 4 years.
Rich John.
Thank you. District 4, which comprises this parts of the city of Ithaca, a little bit of Cornell, College Town, East Hill, the Commons, and some of Fall Creek. It has the greatest density of any of the districts and has a lot going on in it. It's been a real honor to serve this district for the last 6 years, and I'm looking forward to four more. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Veronica Pillar.
Hi, I'm Veronica Pillar, they, them, or she, her pronouns, I'll offer two. I represent District 2, right next to Rich's. It's the majority of Fall Creek, basically the northeast quadrant of the city of Ithaca. So University Avenue, Cornell Heights, a little bit of Cornell, and the glorious Stewart Park. And I'm excited to begin in this role representing this mostly residential area.
Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I represent District 5, which is the entire town of Ulysses, the top northern third of the town of Enfield, and a small portion of the town of Ithaca,
between around the hospital to the city line. And I use the pronouns she and her. And I wanted to thank my the residents and the constituents in my district for reelecting me. And I look forward to working with returning and the new legislators in the coming 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Greg Neese?
Yeah, District 13, the western portion of the town of Dryden, so the sort of the other half of what Mike Lane was talking about. I'm excited to be here, looking forward to a great year. I think there's a lot in store for us in 2022, so looking forward to working with everybody.
We like to call Dryden the crown jewel.
So do we.
Just
you'll fit in fine here.
We're on the same page, good.
John, it's finally caught on after many years.
Yeah, well, here we are, 2022. Lee Shurtleff.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman.
Thank you.
Lee Shurtleff, representing District 9, the northeast corner of Tompkins County. It contains all of the towns, the town and village of Groton, as well as northeast Lansing and northeast Dryden, in the Plain area. And a lifelong resident of that district, and I look forward to representing friends and neighbors and working with my new colleagues here on the legislature. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lee. Randy Brown.
Thank you. I represent District 8, which is all Newfield and about two-thirds of Enfield. I share with Ann. I'm looking forward to working with her in areas there. It's an honor to be elected by the people of District 8. I'm going to work hard for them. My major goal is going to be to connect more with my constituents. It's going to be a real challenge. I know everybody has that challenge. It's an honor to work with people. I've been watching what you do, and I don't think there's a lot I'm going to do to improve the work ethic that you have and all your energy, but I hope to add to it.
Thank you, Randy. Mike Sigler.
Hi, my name is Mike Sigler. I represent the town of Lansing, or a good portion of the town of Lansing, and Deborah represents the other part of it. I am entering my 13th year on the Tompkins County Legislature. And what else? Well, I also work for Park Outdoor Advertising, so I handle all the billboards in this community. And that's about it. So I want to thank the people of Lansing for voting me in again. Thank you for your confidence, and I'll do the job to the best of my ability. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. You know what? Why don't we go to Henry Granison? I actually skipped Henry, but he's right in the middle. Henry, we can't hear you. Oh, we still can't hear you.
Still can't hear you.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I represent the 3rd District, which is known as the Bell Sherman and South Hill Districts. I also overlap with George McGonigal in the 1st Ward, which is the South Hill part.
Henry, we can't hear you.
Okay.
We need to get you a new computer.
Yes, this is a new computer. Well, I represent the 3rd District in South Hill and Bell Sherman.
Okay, we got that. Thank you. Travis Brooks?
I represent District 1, that's West Hill and the north and south side of the flats, and I'm extremely excited to be here.
Excited to have you. Dan Klein?
I represent District 7, the towns of Danby and Caroline, and a small sliver of the town of Ithaca, the south side of East King Road.
Thank you. Amanda Champion?
Hi, I represent District 12, which is the best district. Might not be the crown jewel, but it's the best. And that is the west side of the town of Ithaca and part of Inlet Valley and part of South Hill of the town of Ithaca.
Thank you. Deborah Dawson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I represent District 10. I'm the only person here who can say that my district is a perfect 10. Jewels aside, anyway, my district is the villages of Lansing and Cayuga Heights and the Renwick Heights neighborhood of the town of Ithaca.
Great. And my name is Shauna Black. I represent District 11
And I represent the eastern part of the town of Ithaca. So that would be the northeast area, Forest Home, Eastern Heights, and a little bit of South Hill. So great. Thank you, everyone. Let's open it up for announcements and questions, concerns for legislators. Privilege of the floor. Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Shauna. For the benefit of new legislators, and particularly Veronica, and for the benefit of anyone who's watching, I think we need to understand the purpose of public comment. Public comment is an opportunity for the public to express whatever concern happens to be on their mind. It is not an opportunity to attack an individual legislator. It is not for the purpose of starting a conversation. If somebody comes in here to public comment and makes a statement that you don't agree with, I guess you're free to respond, but they have no right to demand an answer from you. So just understand, you know, that's your privilege, and I want to be sure that you understand that. Thank you.
We also have rules for speaking on the floor, and perhaps we should, I'm happy to read those before every meeting so that people that engage in our public comments will know those rules beforehand. Any other comments from legislators? Veronica.
Yeah, thank you, Shauna and Deborah, for that. But I guess I do want to respond to what was brought up by Mr. Nguyen. First, just if people don't know, the organizations he named, the Ithaca Pantheras and Ithaca Tenants Union, I'm glad you brought them up. I think they're both grassroots organizations doing great work in the city and sometimes out of it. The Pantheras is trying to build a self-sustaining economy outside of systems that have failed a lot of largely marginalized people, and working really hard to raise the issues of how things like police brutality affect our communities. And the Ithaca Tenants Union is building collective power among renters in Ithaca, and again, often outside, which I think is really important in order to make sure that people who have basic needs that are not being met are able to have people to advocate for them in a system that's much easily more navigated by landlords and real estate developers and people with just a lot more resources to go through that. So I'm glad people know about them. I am involved with both of these organizations, but I don't really organize with them, and neither of them, just to record straight, neither of them supported me on my campaign for this office. I wonder if people are maybe mixing up social justice groups into one big pot, and they're not. About Shauna, people's houses, I think it's, you know, I as a public official now take very seriously my responsibility to communicate with constituents. I know everyone around this table does. And so I understand the desire of people, too, to really be heard by their public officials who are accountable to them. And so I understand why you'd want to show up at someone's house if you don't feel like you've been heard in some other way, or you trying escalating tactics to get through to someone. So I will point out that everyone's you know, emails, phone numbers, those are all public. You can contact us in much more easy, less disruptive ways. If it is the case that people have tried those channels and not been heard, and I don't mean agreed with, because of course people bring up all sorts of opinions and we're not all going to agree with each other. But if you've been heard and understood and have gone through these other channels, have not been heard and understood and have gone through these other channels, then I would not condemn someone for escalating. I do not know what happened in these cases. I wasn't part of it. I'd also like to note that one of the targets of these strong people's houses also like did support my campaign and works in partnership with the Ithaca Tenants Union. So it's maybe not as dramatic as our public commenter made it seem. And lastly, of course, I'm happy to talk about this more as stated if you'd like to contact me offline. Preferably not by beginning with showing up at my house.
Thank you, Veronica. Rich John?
I'll start out with an apology in that I hesitate that we probably shouldn't be talking about national issues as often as sometimes we do. But I found that the January 6th event, which we're coming up to the anniversary of, has been on my mind, and I just keep coming back to it. And I'd like to talk about it in the context of a conversation I had with a resident yesterday. We had a fairly lengthy telephone conversation on exactly those issues of wearing masks, vaccines, and employment. And this person was saying that they can't get a job because they won't get vaccinated and they won't wear a mask, and asking that we as a legislature somehow disagree with the state and take the position that we will not enforce vaccine requirements or the wearing of masks. I believe those are useful, important things for us to do. I believe masks make a difference and that the vaccines are really helping us. But we live in a country where people disagree. And it does seem lately that the disagreement has gone beyond civil, that we've lost the ability to argue and then to agree to a resolution. And I think you can describe democracy in many different ways, but one of the most simple is that we don't want a king or a queen. That's what we overthrew and said, we're going to try something different. And at its most basic level, you can look at democracy as not getting your way sometimes and how hard that is. And I've experienced that myself sitting here. I think I have great ideas. But frankly, if I can't convince seven more of you that my idea is great, it doesn't matter. And I have to suck it up and say, okay, didn't get that one. And at a national level, we don't seem to be able to do that. That you just don't say, okay, I lost. Sometimes you lose. And it scares me a lot that we are at a point on a national level that that's the level of the conversation. I am so grateful that here in Tompkins County, we can lose. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, but as a decision engine that democracy demands, we've been able to make decisions and live with them. And frankly, I think we've made the right decision about masks and the right decisions about vaccines. There's certainly consequences to that. And I understand this person wants to work. And that's a bad thing that somebody can't go out and do a job every day. It is a consequence of the pandemic. And we have to live with that. But I think we also have to recognize this, that's a consequence of our decisions. And okay, but going forward, I really appreciate what we are doing, and I hope we set a good example for our national leaders, because they really, really need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Ann Corman, and then Mike Lane.
Thank you. I just wanted to add on just a little bit to what my colleague Rich John was saying in regards to trying to keep us safe, our community safe. I've had many jobs in healthcare, and sometimes we have to wear gloves, masks. We have to get vaccinated. We have to get revaccinated for different things. And I've had two of my own businesses. One I had to get certified by New York State and keep up on continuing education. Another one, I had a food service establishment, and there were lots of rules that I had to follow. And we might not like them, but I think most of the rules out there, especially with, you know, with masks, I mean, myself, I'm very comforted to see that everybody has a mask here. And because I was nervous about coming today, my sister and her two kids just got over having COVID. And so it hits home for all of us. And I am glad that Zachary keeps coming to talk to us. But please, as people have said, you know, demanding that we do certain things, you know, that's just not how democracy works.
we can try and convince us each other, but we there's very few things that we can demand that another person do. So I just wanted to let him know that and other people know, and I will do my best to continue to listen, as my colleague Veronica Piller talked about too. That's one of the biggest things that we can do, is to listen. We might not always agree, but seek to understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Mike Lane.
Rich, I thought you were going one place when you started talking about what happened January 6th last year. And I'd just like to kind of follow up on that, although I like what you said also about the COVID issues. You know, tonight each of us signed a yellow card in which we swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New York. In the scheme of things, nationwide, we're what would be known as minor public officials. We may think we're important in Tompkins County, but there are thousands of people like us out there doing the job of supporting our constitutions and the state constitutions where they are. January 6th frightened me and a lot of us when we saw a mob attack our Capitol building, some place that belonged to all of us, that many of us visited over the years. I remember visiting it when I was in high school, for example. I'm glad that it's being investigated. I'm glad the folks that desecrated our Capitol have been prosecuted. And I'm glad that that they will, the ones that are guilty are being sentenced to the various things that they're being sentenced to. Each of us needs to think all the time about supporting our constitutions, whether it's voting rights, whether it's the right of free speech, right of religion, the right to be here in this country. All those things are important. So I would just follow up on that and say it's important that we keep that in mind now, with it's a year later, almost from January 6th. And I do want to add my congratulations to Shauna and Deborah for their election. And certainly my congratulations to Travis and Randy and Lee, Greg and Veronica for joining us. I think you'll find this is a wonderful experience that you will always treasure. You always learn when you're here constantly. And that's what I found in my terms here, is it's always an education, and in a good way. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Dan Klein.
Thank you. I received my tax bill, my county tax bill yesterday.
Certainly.
And I know most people, you know, kind of dread that day. Actually, I always look forward to it. I enjoy it. I really do. One thing, it makes me feel like an adult. And then also in the spirit of education, I mean, I read it very closely, and I learn a lot of things just from kind of reading through everything and such. And this year really put a skip in my step, though, today, a spring in my step, because I compared it to last year's tax bill. And my taxes went down this year. My taxes went down this year because we, the county legislature, in the last budget, made a 0% change in the tax levy. Now, as we said at the time, that doesn't mean every single person's taxes are going to go down. There's other factors that play into it. But for me, my assessment did not go up, so my taxes went down. And they went down considerably. My town tax went up by $47. My Danby fire tax went up $1. As far as I'm concerned, the firefighters could have had twice that much. They deserve that. And my Tompkins County tax went down $134. That is significant. So I just wanted to, you know, celebrate that with us. Because we did that. We did something that, as far as I know, had not been done before. It's possible, but no one's been able to show me another year that we had a 0% tax change. And here is the manifestation of that, is more money in my pocket, which I will spend locally and
it'll circle around and it's good for everybody. Thank you.
You forgot the solid waste fee, Dan.
Solid waste fee went up $5, but it's offset by all that other stuff.
Dan, since you love tax bills so much, I'm going to drop mine off in your mailbox.
Mine's already in your mailbox. Yeah, you can take another step in adulting by paying someone else's taxes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yeah, as a follow-up to Dan's observations about his tax bill, we got ours as well. And I just want to draw everyone's attention to the pie chart on the tax bill that shows that, at least with respect to the county taxes, 67 cents of every dollar that we spend as a county is mandated. We have no choice about how we spend that 67 cents. So of every dollar we collect from our residents who pay taxes, we only decide what to do with 33 cents. Just bear that in mind. And anyone who's listening, understand that 67 cents of that dollar is something that you need to talk to Albany about. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on privilege of the floor for the legislators? New people, feel free to jump in. Okay. Let's move on. I am not going to have a chair's report, as I already took up time doing my speech this evening. And I do not have any appointments. We will not have special topical presentations and or discussions. We will have a report by our county administrator, Lisa Holmes.
Good evening, everyone. And just wanted to extend my congratulations and welcome to our new legislators. And congratulations to our new legislative leadership. I think on behalf of the whole county admin team, we look forward to working with all of you in the coming year. And in terms of report, I have two reports tonight. One is the report on the Reimagining Public Safety. Deanna Carithers, our Chief Equity and Diversity Officer, will kick that off, followed by a COVID report for it with our Amy Hendricks and our County Health Department team. So I'll hand it over to Deanna.
All right. Good evening, good people. Happy New Year. I'm so excited to see all of you. Glad everyone is safe and well. And so also I'd like to extend congratulations again to our chair, vice chair, and our new colleagues. And so I look forward to doing the good work with you in the future. So we're going to start off the year off strong, hopefully, by being able to share a screen. Can we see my screen?
Yes, can.
Winning already. Okay, so I'd like to just thank a few colleagues as we get started. This is one of the we always talk about the art and what reimagining public safety symbolizes. And so this is another mural, and I'd like to thank our communication director Dominic Recchio for doing yeoman's work to continue to again make sure that our work and that we do that. This is a picture of safety. This is a picture of happiness. This is a picture where I think we could all see ourselves in this space doing something like this, or seeing our children in this space, and specifically looking at our Black and brown communities and making sure that they feel safe, equally as safe as everyone else. See if I can scroll. Okay. Can I go forward? All right. So our charge. Former Governor Cuomo issued Executive Order 203 to look at disproportionate impact on minoritized communities and, again, center the process around communities of color. Over the last approximately 9 months ago, the city and county passed joint resolutions. Again, some were county specific and some were city specific. Again, looking at how we reimagine public safety, knowing that this is a living, breathing document that will continue to grow and continue to expand and will continue to move the process forward. Again, with that, our goal is to be inclusive of our minoritized community. And one of the goals also, in addition to as a part of this plan, is to create and implement the community justice. So just a little bit of progress that we've made. Again, just knowing 9 short months ago, it feels like it may feel like an eternity for some, especially with COVID and things of that nature. In the spring of March 30th and March 31st, the county and city, again, adopted joint plans. And in the summer, the city working group was on board and they began their work in terms of the city redesign. And then also we began planning for the Community Justice Center. For those who may not be as familiar with the Community Justice Center, that will be the collaborative engine that helps implement the joint plans of our approved plans. And then also, once we realized all of the work that has been approved and all the work to be done, we began our plan sequencing, knowing that we're working with our Criminal Justice Center, criminal justice system partners, knowing that we want to support them, but also making sure that we continue to center and hear our communities of color. So we sequenced out all the plans in terms of launch dates, how we need to implement them, knowing that we'll need staff to do the work, but then again, trying to be methodical and align the work with our current government system, but also continuing to push our systems forward. In the fall, we launched our Reimagining Public Safety website for community input, which is www.publicsafetyreimagined.org. And so you've heard us talk about that extensively over the last few months. And that's the place where all of our plans live for community input and ideas. And they, we at some point, depending upon where the plan is, will review those plans against a rubric for implementation. And then in the fall, I am grateful to our county legislator and our common council. They approved a little more than over $1.7 million related to the reimagined public safety plans. Most of those costs are shared equally between the city and county, but there are, again, county-specific plans like the pilot program for an unarmed response that is funded exclusively around the, by the county. And in the winter, the city of Ithaca working group is finalizing their report. And I think, as George mentioned earlier, they'll have their report done somewhere between the end of January timeframe. And then also we're excited to announce that, as we mentioned before, that our Community Justice Center project director has been hired. So some of the plans that are in progress, again, we mentioned the City of Ithaca Department redesign. We also are working together on the community healing plan, knowing that, again, as we have centered Black and Brown communities, knowing we'll have to expand that work to other communities, we have hosted a couple of discussions with partners, including the Southside Center, folks from GIAC, folks from who are working on the LEAD program, folks who are retired in our community, who've come together to say, okay, this is what our community needs to, again, feel safe and to build those trusting relationships. And then we've also, in terms of the alternative response here, this is the alternative response to wraparound health and human service delivery, there was consensus that there was way too much work that had to be done in terms of a mental health support that we needed to have a more robust system. And so we have had some initial series of conversations with some of our, like REACH, some of our partners. We've talked to some folks at Keuka Medical System. We've talked to some folks at the Sheriff's Office to say, we need to continue to look at this response more robustly. And over the next year, we'll conduct a study and provide a recommendation to the group. Looking at the DA and assigned counsel data, that is related to public disclosure. Some of the questions have been raised is, how does our assigned counsel office work? How does our district attorney, what work do they do? And so we've actually started the assessment with a nonprofit called Measures for Justice to look at our systems to understand what our capabilities are in terms of data and reporting. And so I'd like to thank our district attorney for completing that assessment, and we will actually have a report out related to that information in the next few months. Officer wellness, knowing that we need to, as Shauna, I guess, as our chair, her new chair, Chair Black, has mentioned, that we need to make sure we're supporting our employees. And so officer wellness is at the is a critical piece that we need to make sure that we are looking out for them, making sure that they have the resources they need. And so we're looking at several applications to be in support of that, in addition to our employee assistance programs. Some of the programs that we are launching soon or in the middle of the process is our Tompkins County Sheriff's Office for a pilot program for an unarmed response. Our Sheriff's Office has been a good partner in helping us understand some of the duties that are ancillary that we don't need road patrol to respond to. We don't need an armed officer to respond to. So we're in the process of reviewing what is a sheriff's clerk position and updating the position description and meeting and looking at particularly calls for an unarmed response that we can work with the sheriff's office on. And so I appreciate their support of the process. Also, we'll be looking at traffic enforcement data and what that looks like in terms of collection, in terms of demographics in the future, in addition to recruitment and retention of officers. And I'd like to thank our HR directors who've been leading the charge in support of that work. So again, we can't say how we cannot excited enough to again announce our Community Justice Center project director. Mona Lita starts on Monday, and we've done several walkthroughs. She's has reviewed the plans. She is up on the work, and so we look forward to having as time goes by transitioning these presentations to her and this work, but also knowing that Shelly and I will continue to be in the background to provide support. Monalita has extensive community ties, and so we look forward to her leveraging those ties in the community to build a supportive structure. So again, the role of the Community Justice Center project director will be to lead the implementation of joint reimagining plans, and then they will also oversee our data analyst and administrative assistant positions. And also they'll be located in the mental health, Thomas County Mental Health Building. And I'd like to thank the mental health staff for their warm welcome to Monalita. Actually, we found out that she actually had some colleagues from prior work experience, and so we think that that will be a positive thing. And also I'd like to thank our ITS staff and our facility staff for, again, getting this new center up and running. And so what are some of the other things that we have done? So we have, again, the community engagement tool that is at www.publicsafetyreimagined.org. So this tool is used to gather community ideas and reactions and comments. And so this process is 100% transparent. And so anytime a community member has a comment, a thought, or a feeling about something, that information is populated on the website. And again, that information mirrors our Tompkins County weekly ad campaign. And so for those who may not want to use the website, again, there's a weekly ad in Tompkins County Weekly that people can send in information, and that information is manually entered into the website. Then also, in terms of the website, it also provides news and updates. And so one of the areas that we will be populating soon is the Community Justice Center Advisory Board Development Subcommittee, all the notes and resources and some of the draft information discussion that will be listed there. And so I'd like to thank our new chair and then Legislator Rich John for their volunteer and service to that committee, in addition to Laura Lewis and Cynthia Brock. And so they've been doing yeoman's work working through this, in addition to Center for Policing Equity and then Dr. Paula Iannidi on this work. Also, another thing in terms of the website, again, it shows what plans have been implemented and then our progress to date. And again, it shows where we are in the review process as well. So what's next? And so what this means is that we'll continue to launch more plans in the upcoming year. We'll provide more information. Again, we're excited about the alternative response for wraparound services. And so we will, as we have forums, as we have information, as we continue to update our community, all the information will be there. And then also we will, again, continue to see the Community Justice Center onboarding, and then including our data analyst search in addition to the administrative assistant. And then it's not necessarily a point for you, but a point for our community at large, is that the city working group will deliver their report to Common Council in February on the recent. And with that, I stand for any questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Deanna. Boy, and the idea of moving meetings along faster, I appreciate how fast you speak, because presentation was probably an hour and a half, and you nailed it in 12 and a half minutes. So thank you. let's see here. Are there any questions for Deanna? Deanna, I also want to extend our thanks for being our leader with this group. Every week, Rich, myself, and Deanna meet every Tuesday at 8:30. And I am not a morning person. Sometimes I come in my pajamas. And Deanna is the most chipper voice to be greeted by, and it makes the meeting go so smoothly, and she's just a pleasure to work with. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And Deborah, that speed was just for you. You know, I tried to slow it down a little bit, but I just wanted to make sure they were calibrated for 2022.
Well, you slowed down your speed, and my ears are starting to get faster, and I'm sure we'll get it worked out in this next 4 years.
And so also I would just like to say, as we wrap up, I wanted to say I appreciate and applaud the comments that were made by the chair at the very beginning, because talking about diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice as a part of our workforce is of critical importance. And so I had the opportunity to share, I did a podcast today with the NYSAC organization. And so it was just a really proud moment to be able to say you're a part of an organization that's doing such good work. So thank you to all of you. You're going to be my new favorite 14 people.
We like that. Any questions for Deanna or comments? Okay, I see none. Thank you very much, Deanna. Lisa, do you have any other updates for us?
I do want to turn it over to Amy for the COVID update.
Okay. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Shauna. Hi, everyone. And I'm joined by Frank, of course. I
I know you didn't want to speed up past the COVID updates, so we will go ahead and provide the updates for you. And welcome to all of the new legislators who have joined. And we'll go through kind of our regular updates. And if you have any additional questions, feel free to just let us know.
I just want to add to Amy Hendricks is our deputy county administrator. And Frank Krupa, who is also on the Zoom, is our commissioner for public health and mental health, so that everyone has some background.
Thanks for that, Shauna. So I hope you're seeing the right thing at this point. You'll notice we have refreshed our PowerPoint presentation. After 300 and some slides in a couple of years, we decided to kick this off with a new slideshow set. So this presentation provides information since the last legislature meeting through today. And here are some updates on that. So it's from December 21st to January 4th. Currently, we have 10 hospitalizations related to COVID. Since we last met, we did lose another community member to COVID-19. We also have launched our form for self-testing, where we allow people who do at-home tests to report their positive results. We received 520 total positives reported since we started this. We're continuing to keep track of vaccine doses. You may have seen a little bit of a slowdown over the holidays the last 2 weeks, but that's about to pick up once again as we get into finishing up some of those youth clinics in the next couple of days. Some announcements came out from New York State over the last few weeks, and even this evening, I think more are coming out. So we will have further updates in the near future for you. One of those things is declaring a disaster emergency on December 26th, which continued a lot of the terms and conditions and suspensions from that initial executive order. Those extensions have gone through till January 25th. The legislature will take up some of those. We also had the announcement from the CDC about a change in isolation guidance, and we were waiting for New York State's adoption, and I believe while we've been in this meeting, there has been more information on that. So we're not going to have all of that information at this point, but as with COVID, things are ever-changing. And that's one of the things that we've learned over the last almost 3 years is how to flex on all of this. Other things locally, Cornell announced that booster requirement for their spring semester. All campuses are starting to look at how they'll be bringing back those students safely into the community. The school districts are grappling with some remote learning and distribution of home test kits throughout the school districts. We are also coordinating with municipalities to deliver some home test kits that we'll be receiving from New York State. And we also partnered with our nonprofits to deliver some KN95 masks to our community. Upcoming vaccine clinics. So I mentioned the youth clinics. Those are their second doses. And then we're going to be doing the Duner booster clinics every Saturday in January. So those clinics will be ongoing. And I know that there's one coming up this Saturday and registration is currently open for that. Our public information team is continuing to do really stellar work on ensuring that our community knows about all these changes that are happening and how they're happening here locally. It can be confusing as new federal and state guidance rolls out. When does it actually apply to us and how does that work? And our team is doing a really great job at doing that. And then tomorrow night, I believe it's tomorrow night, we're going to be doing a COVID town hall to talk more about some of the guidance changes. So what does this mean for our county? Our employees continue to respond to COVID-19. This is a chart that shows some of those response mechanisms. COVID-related expenses, that red line, is largely our testing program. The legislature adopted a policy last year, I believe, or the year prior, that we would provide testing free to any county resident or person that works within Tompkins County at the CUGA Health site. We've continued to do that. We've also expanded it to our municipal partners and their employees. And so we continue to see those testing expenses month to month increase. Our employees also, you'll see that there's total employee hours combined overtime and regular hours. Although I think it was recently pointed out to me as some of our employees, as we've gone through kind of these spells where it seems like there's less COVID work, when we return to COVID work, we may not be accurately reporting how much time is being done with COVID response. So we're continuing to look and refine that. And now I'm going to turn it over to Frank to talk more about what we're seeing locally as far as COVID and COVID spread.
Thanks, Amy, and good evening, everyone. Want to start before we get into the data with kind of an overview of where we are and where we're heading. I've been talking with you in the community for several months about the coming transition from pandemic to an endemic state. And that's happening more rapidly right now. We are making that transition, and there's going to be several things we're doing in the coming days that will really feel different about our response to COVID. It doesn't mean that COVID isn't a risk anymore. It absolutely is. And there are still steps that we need to take, like continued mask wearing, encouraging vaccinations, that will be ongoing. But the way that we respond to positive cases through isolation and quarantine is going to be shifting. As Amy alluded to, both New York State Department of Health and the CDC in the last hour have released guidance reducing isolation and quarantine times to 5 days if certain criteria are met. So we will be adopting that locally beginning tomorrow. Obviously, we've got some significant messaging that will need to occur around that. I want to talk a little bit about why we're doing that and why it's important. Obviously, quite frankly, I'm a little disappointed in our federal government's messaging around the decision making for this change, because it's allowed it to become something that it isn't. The reason that we're making the shift is twofold. The first is the science, particularly around the Omicron variant, tells us that within the first 5 days, so 2 days prior to symptom onset and 3 days after, is the prime transmission point with Omicron. And the transmission drops off dramatically subsequent to that. So pushing out 5 days post the onset of symptoms is actually adding an additional buffer to that. I mean, it's obviously a reduction. And so that, you know, that can feel shocking. But it really is based off of what we know about Omicron and the evolution of the disease. The other reason has to do with our broader approach to isolation and quarantine. So as you know, from the beginning of the pandemic, we were using the isolation and quarantine tools in our public health toolkit to interrupt disease transmission. Well, there's a challenge with that, particularly when we're dealing with Omicron, which is so easily transmitted. We can't keep up. And so the effectiveness of isolation and quarantine from a public health intervention perspective is diminished, right? It's not that it's not valuable or in a different situation, such as at the beginning of the pandemic. It's extremely valuable. But at this point, it's really transitioned to a place where it doesn't have the same value in interrupting the disease spread. So what does that mean? By shifting to 5 days, it means that our work on case investigations and contact tracing is going to taper off from the health department, meaning the phone calls, the formal isolation and quarantine orders that are a legal tool that require you to stay in your home will no longer be issued by the health department. It doesn't mean that isolation and quarantine still isn't necessary. And part of what we're going to need to do over the coming days and weeks is educate our community about what they need to do if they become symptomatic or test positive. And we're going to be working on that here in the coming days. So we're really shifting from a behavior intervention model led by the health department to a behavior intervention model that will really be based on self-responsibility. Meaning if someone tests positive or has symptoms, we need them to stay home for 5 days. And it's going to be incumbent upon them to follow that. We're going to ask employers and schools to support people in being able to do that. But it is going to be a significant shift in our approach. That will be happening in the coming days. We'll certainly communicate, you know, how that's going to happen, what it's going to look like. We do still have the self-testing reporting part. If somebody does get a lab-based test, it will still go into the state system. The state is looking to build some kind of response system to anyone that gets a positive test result. As that's developed and more information is available, we'll, of course, share that with our community more widely. So this is an important step in our phase, an important phase in the evolution of our response to the disease. And there's going to be a lot of change in the next few days and weeks that we're going to ask folks to be patient with us. And we're going to do our best to communicate both what we're asking folks to do and why we're asking them to do it. So that's kind of where we are in the current state as far as what folks should expect from us in the coming days and weeks. Now, moving on to the data now, here we can see our resident deaths. You can still obviously tell that for those, it's impacting disproportionately the seniors in our community. Vaccination status still plays a role in limiting the severest reaction to COVID. And so we encourage vaccinations, including boosters, as well as, you know, additional steps to protect the seniors in our community as much as we can. Go ahead, Amy. Again, just continuing with vaccination status across since February, it kind of shows the data as it's progressed. Not much change here since the last time. Hospitalizations story really hasn't changed much. For those under 70 years of age, vaccination status plays a significant role in the need for hospitalizations. I mentioned the self-testing and guidance report form. We are not currently doing case investigations or contact tracing on home tests, but we do have a form that folks can report those results. It generates an automated email that provides them with information first about what they should do for their health, what it means to isolate and talk with household contacts about quarantining. And then also it provides them documentation that they submitted a positive test result to the health department. So PK through 12, this is a big issue, right? We hear the governor talking regularly about needing to keep kids in schools, and we agree wholeheartedly with that. The safest place for many children, both for COVID and many other issues, is in school, as well as the, you know, obviously the needs for development and their education progression. So it, to that end, the state has distributed self-tests to BOCES to distribute out to the schools. Many of the schools sent them home either over the weekend or in the last couple of days. Those tests were really designed for a reentry program, wanting to identify if there were students and or staff that were positive from the holiday break before they came back to school. Obviously, the timing of those tests being available has limited that a bit, but we are shifting to this, you know, home test approach and asking folks to be responsible with the results. We are not supporting test to stay at this point. I know the governor has talked a lot about test to stay. It's resource intensive. And quite frankly, those resources don't exist at this point for a countywide approach to doing test to stay. We've been talking with the districts. They concur. We are still interested in keeping kids in school, and we do believe that shifts in the isolation and quarantine timeframe are going to have a more significant impact on that than test to stay will. We've been talking quite regularly with the districts. One thing to mention too, I didn't talk about Omicron and kind of its prevalence in the community. It is very close to the predominant strain that we are now dealing with. We have some general information about hospitalization. So 75% of those individuals that have gone to the emergency department in the last 3 or 4 weeks and were discharged from the emergency department, meaning they did not get admitted, 75% of them were Omicron. Of that same time frame, 75% of the people that were admitted to the hospital were Delta, right? So we still know that Delta has a more significant impact on the severity of illness. And as Omicron becomes more prevalent in our community, we're hopeful that that will have the same impact on limiting the need for admittance to the hospital, you know, one of our severity measures that we're looking at. And so, you know, knowing that, and with all of the changes that are going to be occurring, case counts are no longer the measure for how things are going, right? We get a lot of questions about, are we reporting Cornell's tests? Are we reporting health, home tests? Are we reporting lab tests? Is it all together? It's going to become more and more difficult to know all of the results that occur. And so those results are really not the measure that we're looking for to determine how we're progressing with COVID. It really is about severity of illness, not overwhelming our healthcare system, and hopefully having folks have a mild case of COVID that they recover quickly from and can get back about their lives. And that's all I
have. I was going to say, I think that concludes what we have, but I do want to, for those of you that are new, to let you know about kind of some of the team members that are behind the scenes making this all happen. Thank you, Shauna, for introducing myself and Frank early on. Frank serves as the Public Health Director, Commissioner of Mental Health. We're also supported by a number of staff members, including Dominic Recchio, who sets up our PowerPoints and does so much more than just communications with everything COVID and making sure we are getting things out into the community. Jay Franklin has been on the team since the beginning, our assessment director, but he's served in the role of planning and coordination for a while. He was managing transportation and many other different aspects of it. Dominic is supported by an entire public information officers team, which has changed throughout the course of the pandemic. And then there's the nurses and others at the health department, as well as our staff. Throughout COVID, we have done a variety of different things. We've pivoted time and time again. We've gone from making masks in-house to making sure that people are able to get to the mall testing site, to making sure that we can then convert it to vaccine clinics and everything else. So I think that, as Frank talked about, as this progresses again and we change from pandemic to endemic, there's going to be a lot more pivots in our future. And this team continues to do that. And so I just want to acknowledge my appreciation for all of them and for all of our departments that have come together to respond to this while doing everything else, and for the leadership of the legislature helping us and being beside us along the way for this. So that's the end for our COVID updates, unless there are questions, which I'm sure there's none of.
Hi, Clint.
Frank, on your chart about fatalities, started at age 50. Have we had any fatalities for people under 50?
No, the chart includes all of the deaths since the date that the chart starts.
Okay.
Ann Corman.
Thanks. I had a couple of questions. One, you said about the test to stay. I'm not really familiar with that. I'm assuming that would require staff and students to be tested to stay in school. Is that what that is?
Correct. It's a program for exposed individuals to be able to continue to go to school. During the 10-day quarantine period, they would have to be tested at least 3 times. And there are criteria that have to be met in order to be eligible. And that criteria would severely limit the number of people that were actually eligible for it.
So I guess, so we're not doing that. And so that would be if somebody was exposed, you're saying? So, okay. So they have to stay home. Then, so with the self-tests, I've had some questions. Where again are the self-tests going that we've received? I think before you said nonprofits. We have a little more detail on that.
So the self-tests will be going to all of the municipalities in the county for distribution by the municipal electeds. So they have received an allocation based on population. We're receiving about 4,500 self-test kits. So hopefully we'll receive more in the future, but we allocated them and then asked that the chief electeds of each municipality assist with distribution. The KN95 masks we distributed to nonprofits. And then I will say the other thing is these test kits are, we've asked them to earmark them for people who may not be able to obtain them on their own or make it to the mall site because of the use of the test kits, which is a little different. I don't know, Frank, if you have anything else on that.
No, that covers it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I guess I must have mixed that up. So it was the masks that went to the nonprofits and the tests are going to the municipalities. And the last one, I don't know if you reviewed this again today, but I think you had said last time that, or at some point that you were asking people in the community rather than going to go to the count, to the mall site for, that the health department's doing for testing, if unless they're having symptoms. And if they're not having symptoms, they just want to do like a their own screening test, that's hopefully get a self-test and do that at home and then report it to the health department if it's positive. Do I have that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And that's a really good question. And thanks for asking. And if I could add a little bit to that. Yes. So for the mall, PCR testing, we're looking for people that are symptomatic or a known exposure to a case, right? Those are our primary folks that we would like to see getting a PCR test result. The other at-home kits, they are a screening tool. They are good at identifying positive cases that we might not otherwise have known about. So if you're going to a gathering or you're going to an event or to go to school or some other scenario, you want to know, hey, am I positive? That's what those tests are good for. They're not good for ruling out COVID if you're symptomatic. If you are symptomatic and you take a home test and it tells you you're negative, you should seek a PCR test to confirm that. So it's really important, and we're going to work on communicating this because your question is not unique. We've gotten it a lot in, and it really is the purpose of the home test is a screening tool for asymptomatic individuals that we would not otherwise have known were positive. If you are symptomatic or a known contact to a case, we would ask that you go get a PCR test to confirm.
Okay, and then if they are positive with a home test, say asymptomatic with a home test, you're taking it for screening, do you recommend they follow that up with this PCR test if they're asymptomatic but positive?
No, if you get a positive test of any kind, just assume you're positive and act accordingly. And what that will mean beginning tomorrow is to isolate for 5 days from, if you're asymptomatic, from the date that you took the test. So that would be a 5-day isolation period. There will be additional guidance about wearing a mask for the second 5 days and other things that will come out. But generally speaking, if you get a positive test of any kind, you can just assume you're positive. Please isolate for the 5 days, because that's really what's going to help us intercept the transmission.
Thank you for clarifying all that.
Deborah Dawson, and then Henry Granison, and then Randy.
Thanks, Shauna. Thank you, Frank. Quick question. Do we have any program scheduled or plans for vaccinating homebound bedridden residents?
Yeah, we're in the process of planning that. I'm meeting with the nurses tomorrow to put a plan together to start that process. So I would imagine probably next week or the week after at the latest that we'll begin the homebound process.
Thank you. Will somebody be letting us know? Because I know we probably all have some homebound constituents that are quite concerned.
Yes, and we also know who we did the first go around. So we'll be reaching out to those folks specifically to see if they're interested in a booster as well.
Great. Thank you.
Henry Granison.
Yes, thank you, Frank. Are you going to publish the numbers on the booster shots that people receive ever?
As soon as the state makes them available to us, we'll certainly point people to them. So far, we've not had access to that information, and we're not providing enough booster doses for our numbers to really be representative of the actual boosted population. So as soon as the state has those numbers for us, we'll share them or point people to them.
I noticed in your slides that the month of December, there were 9 deaths, and 8 of them were vaccinated. Were they also boosted?
I don't know the answer to that question, Henry.
Okay. Were you surprised to see the number of vaccinated people, of deaths?
I think what we've seen is it's seniors. We know that, you know, based on the data that we have. And we know that seniors are the most susceptible amongst us, along with those that are immunocompromised. So, we were in a Delta wave. We got crushed by an Omicron wave on top of the Delta wave, but that underlying Delta wave really is what caused the most damage from a severity of illness perspective. And so, you know, we knew that with our senior population, even being fully vaccinated wasn't a guarantee, which is why we are still recommending people wear masks indoors. We take special precautions with nursing homes and other congregate senior living facilities because there is still risk. Even with Omicron, there will still be risk. So we need to protect those vulnerable populations.
Last question. In terms of a winter surge, have we already seen a winter surge?
We can't hear you.
Oh, the winter surge? Can you hear me now? When do you, yeah. Have we already experienced it?
It's hard to know. We've certainly experienced one. I think, you know, with Omicron and its transmission rates, and what we've seen in other parts of the world is that it does taper off pretty quickly. But if you'll note, the Omicron spike was mainly in the north and the northeast, and we're starting to see it creep up in other parts of the country. So while we may come off of it a wave, if it spikes someplace else in the country with our interconnectivity, we could potentially see, you know, another wave during the winter cycle. There's just really no way to know. We certainly should prepare for it and be aware, particularly during upper respiratory disease system, upper respiratory system disease timeframe, which is the winter, to be prepared in case we do see cases.
Thank you.
Randy Brown.
Hi, Frank and Amy. I really enjoyed looking at the website and all the data on COVID. That's very helpful for me to understand that. I had a question on the tests being distributed through BOCES from the state. Are those home tests, or are they, is that what those are, or is that something different?
No, the most recent ones are home kits. So they are self-administered. They are provided to the family. The instructions are in the box, and they administer those. The school districts did previously receive what are called antigen tests, but are required to be performed under a laboratory license, which most of our school districts have. So there is some screening testing going on with those types of tests as well.
So the school nurses may be doing tests as well, or
yes.
providing them?
It's the school nurses, generally speaking. It doesn't have to be a nurse. It just has to be somebody that's trained to observe the process. It's pretty easy to do, but it does. We do want to make sure that a trained professional is looking at the process and making sure it's being done appropriately.
Okay. And last two questions. Is there a shelf life for these tests? And does the test tell you if it's Omicron or Delta? Or is it just IES?
Yeah, the tests are just a positive or negative result. There's no variant. That sequencing is a very complex genetic process done in a virology lab, and it's not a diagnostic test either, so the patient doesn't even end up knowing the results. for the variant component. As far as the shelf life, yes, there is an expiration date on every test. I believe the home tests that were just distributed are good through the summer. So as long as parents have them and use them during the school year, they should be fine. But every test does have an expiration date. Sometimes those expiration dates are extended by the manufacturer in conjunction with approval by the FDA. But yes, everyone has an expiration date.
Frank, I know that our county has allocated funding for testing up at the mall site, and I was wondering if once the over-the-counter home tests are available, if we would consider moving our funding source over to that, considering that it's so much cheaper.
So there are different kinds of tests for different purposes, right? The mall testing is really for symptomatic individuals and those that are close contacts to confirm that they have COVID. The over-the-counter tests, again, are more appropriate for a screening screening tool for those that are asymptomatic. So for the near future, I think the mall is still going to be a necessary tool to be available to the community. In fact, the hospital is looking at increasing capacity at the mall so that there are more appointment slots available. The reality is we're moving towards a place where if you're symptomatic, as long as you don't need healthcare, the test is almost irrelevant, right? If you're symptomatic, we want you to stay home for the 5 days and isolate from when your symptoms began. Obviously, if folks want to seek a test, they should certainly do that. But this is kind of that transition towards endemic. And I think that change will likely be the driver on the necessity for the mall versus the availability of other types of tests like the over-the-counter.
Thank you. Henry, do you have more questions?
No, I do not.
Okay. Anyone else have questions for Frank or Amy? Veronica?
Just quickly, thanks for the comprehensive presentation. And you mentioned the need to educate the community on new plans and processes rolling out. So how can we be prepared to help you with that?
Yeah, so our public information group, they're amazing, and they have all kinds of tools and mechanisms for getting the word out. We send to all legislators our press releases right before they go out, so you will have them before the community gets them, and we would just ask you to help carry the message that's in those press releases. That's really the best way you can help us get the word out.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Amy and Frank. Lisa, do you have any more updates for us?
No, that's it from our end. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you. Joining us tonight is County Attorney Bill Troy. Welcome, Bill.
Well, welcome to you and congratulations, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. I know you've been waiting to see what's going to happen tonight in terms of a county attorney report. As long as you're all seated, I'll give you one. It's going to be short and sweet, though. Jonathan Wood apparently did retire on December 27th. I bought him lunch. He got in his car, and I haven't seen him since. So I'm drawing the conclusion he's gone. It was really good to work with him. He was very helpful walking me through what to expect, since, as you may know, he was working on a different set of legal work than I was in my part-time position. But I'm getting there. I'm playing some catch-up, and I will catch up. I've closed my private law office. I've packed up 80 boxes worth of files in a storage shed, and I'm probably stronger for it, but I'm a lot happier having that behind me. So we are about to start interviewing for a candidate to fill what had been a part-time position as deputy county attorney. It's now a full-time position. We had requested resumes, and the deadline for our receipt of them is January 9th. So at around that time, we're going to begin the interview process, and we'll make a decision as quickly as we can. I just want you all to know I look forward to working with you, and I kind of wish I was there tonight to say hello to the new members in person, but we will get to meet. I'm going to do everything I can to strive to be available to you folks when you call. Most of you have, or if you don't, I'll make available to you my cell phone number. Should be available most of the time unless I'm in court. Judges are funny about that. They don't want you on your phone in court. And I'll get back to you as quickly as I can. You may not always agree with what I recommend, but you're free to make those decisions. I'll give you the best advice I can. And if I feel it necessary and to keep people's minds at ease, we can always seek outside counsel to look at some issues as well. But I'm here to serve you. I look forward to it. I'm sort of settling in here, and I look forward to working with you all.
Great. Thank you so much. This might actually be historical because this is the longest county attorney report. So thank you for your report, and you have set the bar high as far as your comedy act. You've made us laugh. We expect that every month.
I'll work at it.
And then Ann Corman.
Bill, I just wanted to say congratulations on your appointment. We look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
Ann Corman.
Thank you. Yes, Bill, I just want to thank you also for agreeing to help with the next onboarding training. And just want to make sure you got that information for Friday.
I did, and I'll be ready. I'm going to get some material put together to at least circulate there. It's going to be basically statutory language that people can read. And I'll go through everything and answer questions. And I'll be available to follow up with questions to be answered from anybody.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Bill Troy? I see no hands. Thank you very much, Bill. Have a good
night.
Thank you. And we are joined by Director of Finance, Rick Snyder. Hello, Rick.
Hello, good evening, everybody. Especially want to welcome all the new legislators and let you know that at any point in time, when you'd like to come over and visit our finance office, we'll be more than welcoming you here so that you can meet some of our folks on the second floor in our Treasury Division, in our accounting division, purchasing, and payroll. So just let me know when you would like to stop by and visit, and we'll coordinate an effort to introduce you to some of the fine finance staff that we have here. I also welcome Bill because he comes at a time that we have a serious upgrade in numbers and difficulty of public estates to handle. As you may or may not be aware, that the county finance director is in charge of being the public administrator of those folks who die without a will, have no representatives to handle their estates. They go through the surrogates court system, and ultimately I, as the chief financial officer for the county, I inherit these estates to manage. And at any point in time, we can have as few as two or three estates that we're working on, or as many as what we have now, which is about seven. And they're tight, quite time consuming, and don't get any additional pay for handling these estates. It's part of the job that the director of finance takes on here for Tompkins County, unlike some other counties. But we've gotten so many, and Bill's been helpful in two ways, saying that he and his staff would help us manage some of the work that goes with some of the minor estates, the ones that aren't quite so difficult. And we also have contracted out some of the work to a local attorney who's an expert in estate law, and we've been working with that local attorney for the last 3 weeks or so because we have four or five estates that have really heated up and we need to move on. And it can involve, in any one estate, they can be as simple as distributing cash to some distributees, whoever we find on the family tree, or they could be as complex as having to sell real estate, cleaning out properties, marshaling all the assets, taking them to court dates, to the surrogate court judge that's assigned to that estate, and Over the past 8 years, we've closed three or four states that were quite difficult. Like I said, we've had an uptick in the numbers that we're dealing with. So I appreciate Bill and his staff offering to do some of the heavy lifting that's required. The only other people that we have on staff that works on estates besides me is my deputy, Drew Brayman. So he and I have been fairly overwhelmed, especially in the midst of year-end closing, with a lot of this estate work. And between him and I, the team that we have in the county attorney's office, and the recently hired contractual lawyer that we have that we're working with, we're beginning to make some headway on clearing up some of these estates. So I don't know if I've ever reported out to this legislature as a group on the estate work that we do. I know that it's come up once or twice in the 8 years that I've been here. But I've never really let you know how much time or effort that it takes from our normal duties here to handle some of the estates for these less fortunate ones that pass away without anyone being able to handle their affairs. The only other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is that we are right now starting our busy audit season. As of the first of the year, I've already kicked off our first two audits of five. We have five audits that we go through each year. And for the new legislators, this might be helpful to know that during the months of January all the way through the end of June, we'll be working on these five audits. The first two are relatively easier ones. We do an audit of the Tompkins TASC. TASC stands for the Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation. And that simply is a small board that's made up of the county chair. Welcome Shauna Black to the Tompkins TASC board. And that's a corporation that's part of Tompkins County government that manages monies that we get from legal settlements from years ago from the tobacco companies. Long, long ago, back in 2005, that money that was awarded to the county is set aside that comes directly to the county. 50% comes right into our general fund that we get every year. And the other half was pledged for bonds for capital debt that we went out and we bought and built some things years ago. And that board meets just one time a year, but we do have to do an audit of all the operating funds for the Tompkins TASC or Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation. So we've begun that one already, and we're in the midst of that. The next one that comes up is the TC County IDA and the Development Corporation. Rich John is familiar with that, and Martha Robertson and other members have been on that board working with the IDA, going to the IDA meetings. Well, I'm the treasurer of the IDA, which means I write all the checks, deposit all the monies that come in for both the Development Corporation and the IDA. So at the end of the year, I work on a financial statement just for the IDA and Development Corporation. So that's the second audit that we pretty much wrap up during the months of February and probably issue that report sometime in March. The third audit that we work on is the Health Insurance Consortium audit, which I also am the treasurer of that. And you're all familiar with our consortium, and that's how we get our health insurance. And Drew and I are familiar with doing books and doing the audit report and working with our auditors on getting that done. That usually, the heavy lifting for that audit is usually in March, and has a state deadline of having to have a state report submitted by April 30th. So March and April are heavy months for when we're working on the consortium audit. Even though the consortium now has some full-time employees, under Elin Dowd, their executive director, they also have Terry Apolovich as a finance manager. She's taken over a lot of the day-to-day duties that we used to do here in our finance office. But Drew and I still will be working this year on finalizing the health insurance audit. The biggest audit is number four, and that's the county audit. We begin work on the county audit as early as December. We've been working on it the last 3 or 4 weeks. And my staff is doing journal entries and closing entries and getting with departments and department heads to get their jobs done for the county audit. That usually winds up at the end of June. So that's a 6-month audit between the closing of the books, the preparation of the financial statements, the actual field audit. We bring to you, the legislature, the end product of that usually in July. So the first or second meeting in July is when we bring you the largest of these five audits, and that's the county audit. The last and final audit is the airport PFC audit, and that stands for passenger facility charge. And we have to do for the FAA a separate audit of the airport and its passenger facility charges. And that pretty much takes place at the very end of our county audit. So I wanted to let you know we're heavy into audit season and we're working diligently to stay on schedule on each of these five different audit paths. So I'll take any questions you might have, whether it be on the states or our fiscal year end and our audits, if you have any.
Okay, why don't we see if there are any questions for Rick, and afterwards we will take a short break. Any questions? Rick, that was a report. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a good night.
You too.
Okay, let's see here. Let's take an 8-minute break.
Donna, can I just ask one question while
Lisa's
still here?
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot to ask this before, Lisa, when you were doing your report, if you're still there. So actually, it might have been mentioned when Amy was doing that report, but just the suspension of open meetings law, is that through the 25th? Or the 15th, I'm not sure.
I think it was through the 15th with the expectation that the state legislature would act on it to continue it thereafter. If not, then the governor will. But one or the other, they feel it's likely to continue.
Okay, so it's the 15th, January 15th.
Yes.
For sure. Okay, because I saw in Amy's report, the emergency orders that the governor did was through the 25th, but I did think it was the legislature that last did it. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it. So the 15th, otherwise we'll have to meet in person if we don't have an update of that.
So Lisa and Amy, will you keep us posted so that legislators might choose to do the committee meetings and the legislature meeting at home via Zoom instead of coming in person?
Yep, sure will.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah?
Yeah, just before we go on break, I wandered back there on the table in the chair's office. There is something that looks suspiciously like baked goods brought by Dan Klein. And for those of you who are new to the legislature, this is one of our best perks. So do take advantage.
That's right. Any other comments? Okay, let's take a break, and we'll meet back at 7:42. Okay, let's move on to our consent. Oh, let's see here. Actually, are there resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. We'll wait for Amanda to get to her seat here.
Thanks. Yes, I would like to add Resolution F, ID 10635, which you should have in your red folder, and that is automatic renewal for 2022 assessment role, low-income senior and disability exemptions.
Okay, can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Deborah Dawson. And just a reminder, we need 10 votes in order to add this to our agenda this evening. Let's do a roll call.
Travis Brooks.
Travis Brooks.
Yes.
Randy Brown.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yes.
Henry Granison.
Yes.
Rich John.
Yes.
Dan Klein.
Yes.
Ann Corman.
Yes.
Lane. Greg Mezzi.
Yes.
Veronica Pillar.
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Vote on consent.
Adding to the agenda.
Yes.
Shauna Black.
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. And that will be added after the Housing and Economic Development Committee report.
Or maybe I could do it on GEO.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great. Okay. Next is our consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. Government Operations Committee, Resolution A, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under the 10498. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution B, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500, ID 10499. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Resolution C, scheduling a public hearing for the grant administration of the New York State Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, award for Tompkins County Healthy Homes Rehabilitation Program, 3, ID 10574. If I can have a mover for the consent agenda, moved by Greg, seconded by Deborah Dawson, and we will do a roll call.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you all. Next, we will move to our standing and special committees. The Downtown Facilities Committee, Rich John, Vice Chair.
Thank you. The Downtown Facilities Committee, I believe, has completed its work. And so I would commend Dave McKenna, the chair, who is no longer with us, for all his good work. I think it falls to me to declare victory and try to take credit. thank you, Dave. The Downtown Facilities Committee is scheduled, I believe, to meet later this month, but it has answered the questions it was charged with addressing, so I don't believe it will be meeting.
Okay.
But that will be up to the new chair of the legislature to determine.
If there is no work and the vice chair thinks that it does not need a meeting, then I am fine with that.
I certainly concur with that. I would anticipate that future questions would probably be addressed to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee or some other standing committee of the legislature going forward.
That makes sense, yes. Sure. Great, thank you, Rich John. Next is Public Safety Committee. Rich John, chair.
thank you, the Public Safety Committee has not met since our last meeting. We'll be meeting the third Thursday of this month. I'm trying to do the math on that. I believe that's the 20th at 3 o'clock. And I would only otherwise note that our jail population today is shown as 38 in the jail with 3 boarded out. So we are maintaining our consistent numbers. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Rich? I see none. Thank you, Rich. Next is Health and Human Services Committee, and I will report on that. We have not had a meeting since our last legislature meeting, and we are rescheduling HHS for Wednesday, January 12th at 10 a.m. We plan on going over our goals that we set in 2021, and then we will have the changing of the guard. Thank you all to suffered through HHS this year. I know it hasn't always been a popular committee, and people have served on it certainly as a labor of love. And I really appreciate everyone that attended the meetings and provided conversation. Any questions for Health and Human Services? Okay. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
I don't think we've met since our last meeting. We will be meeting later this month. Dave McKinnon and Glenn Morey have gone off with their retirements. So we'll be welcoming Randy and Lee to take those positions for this, at least for this meeting, until the new reorganization committees come forward. I would just mention one thing. You know, we've been dealing with Route 13 and Route 13 study for a long time. And driving down here the last few days, I've noticed, just for information, you folks might be interested, that the intersection of Route 13 in the town of Dryden with Kirk Road and Minia Road is now going to have a set of flashing lights, which are being mounted over it. I'd like to commend DOT for doing this. We've had some fatalities at that intersection over the years. And in the past, they have put in some new pedestrian crossing signs, which are highly reflective and show up real well. And it's just the kind of thing that we need to continue to have and need to encourage DOT to help us with for the safety of our residents.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions for Mike Lane? Okay, I see no one. Next is the Tompkins Intergovernmental Relations Committee. Mike Sigler, Vice Chair.
Hi, so we have not met since our last meeting. I don't think we are going to meet this month, and the reasons are various. You know, usually we meet with our county person. I have been informed that he and his wife had a baby, so I think he's on paternity leave. And not that we couldn't get his other person from there in, but, you know, this is going to happen after the state of the state. So we're thinking maybe we're going to have that person come in for the full legislature meeting, since there'll actually be a lot to report after the state of the state, I think. At the federal level, you know, we have the State of the Union coming back, and frankly, Congress just got back to D.C., so I'm thinking they're pretty busy, and maybe a meeting in February would be more valuable there. And Cornell is running around right now trying to get all the people back in school. So I think we can pause on that one as well. So certainly something, you know, Sean is going to be doing new committees. I don't even know if this one will survive. I hope it does. I think it was valuable. And I thank Martha Robertson for running it for the last year. So that's it.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions for Mike? Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Next is the Government Operations Committee. Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will be meeting on Thursday at noon. And Veronica, you would probably be stepping in to fill Leslie Schill's seat. So if you're available, we'd love to see you. What are we going to be talking about? We have kind of a light agenda, which is nice. We are going to talk a little bit more about committees, legislature committees, and we're inviting our chair, Sean Black, to come and be a part of that discussion. We have talked a little bit about it in the past couple months, but just want to, you know, have the opportunity for anyone to come and share your thoughts. Ultimately, the decision of what committees we will have and who will be on each committee is up to our chair. But we felt like government operations is a good place to have a discussion, and provide some feedback, you know, and ideas to take into consideration. I don't have the agenda in front of me, but again, I think it's a fairly light one. And I do have two resolutions that I can do. Okay, I think I'll start with the assessment one because Jay is here. So if people have questions, we can certainly ask him. So I will move, this is the one we just added to the agenda, automatic renewal for 2022 assessment role, low income senior and disability exemptions.
I have a seconder, please. Seconded by Travis Brooks. And Amanda, would you like to talk to this resolution?
I could. I would rather have Jay Franklin, though.
Okay. Hi, Jay.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to all the newbies here. Hopefully you got the email from me today. If you have any questions, give me a yell. My door is always open. But in regards to this, this is the same thing that happened last year. We mailed out the renewal applications, and then Governor Cuomo allowed us to roll over the exemptions so the low-income seniors and disability individuals didn't have to come into our office. This year, we mailed out the renewal applications, and 1 week later, Governor Hochul said, let's grant the assessing units the authority to allow that to happen again this year. I think with the light of everything around us, this is a good maneuver. 1,700 people won't have to come through my door and file their renewal applications and go through all that hassle. So we'll roll it forward. People who moved will obviously won't grant their exemptions. We'll try to get people a larger exemption, but with another change in which income tax year we have to use, it's probably not going to get people a larger income or a larger break, but this will definitely alleviate a lot of our people coming in. The only problem is it only affects two exemptions, and we have about eight other main ones that people do need to reapply for each year, so we'll still get to see all of our agricultural, our housing trusts, our clergy, all of our not-for-profits again. They'll still have to come in and see us, but hopefully, if you pass this, then those 1,700 people won't have to be bothered to do a renewal application.
Thank you, Jay. Are there any questions from legislators? Please, Ertliff.
Just out of curiosity, and maybe I should email you these types of questions, but what's the value of the 1,700? Any idea what the total exemption is for low-income seniors?
No, but I could get that figure to you pretty quickly. I'm going to guess and say $40 million of taxable value. I'm probably very low, but we'll go with that, and I'll send everybody a list of all of the exemptions and all of their taxable values, along with what we have a say over and what the state mandates us to do. So that would be a pretty good refresher.
Thank you. Well, kind of going back to Dan Klein's comments earlier on the effect on the tax bill and what the budgetary process produced this last year, and I think it's always good for the public to know that these programs do have a benefit and what a value might be to our constituents. Thank you.
That's right, Lee. Thank you. Any other questions for Jay Franklin? Okay, I see none. Let's do a roll call. Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich Dunn?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shirtless?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
With 14 ayes, 0 noes. Okay, thank you. Any, you have another resolution, Amanda?
I have a second resolution. This is establishing 2022 meeting dates, and I would move that.
Can I have a seconder, please? Okay, moved by Rich John. Amanda, would you like to talk to this?
Sure. Yeah, so you all have looked at it. We just, at our organizational meeting, we have to vote on what our schedule will be this year. I do have two amendments, which maybe I should do separately, because some might be friendly and some might not. So we have on this list a meeting on Tuesday, March 15th, and that is during the NYSAC conference. So we are, I would move an amendment to change that meeting to Thursday the 17th, and we can all wear green.
Rich, is that friendly?
Friendly.
Okay.
Okay, so, all right, that one works then. So the second amendment would be to cancel the Tuesday, July 5th meeting and just take that off the list.
July what?
That would be friendly to the second.
Cancel the July 5th meeting.
That's the day after July 4th.
Yeah, you can call for those.
Okay. Can we have a second for the motion? Seconded by Mike Sigler. And let's vote on that amendment.
So it's just the one on
July 5th.
Eliminating July 5th.
So what we are voting on right now is Amanda made a motion to take out the July 5th. And Rich seconded that, or I'm sorry, Mike Sigler seconded that. And we are voting right now on whether to do that.
Talk about it?
Absolutely. Mike Lane?
I won't support this. We don't need to take this out. We don't need a vacation in July. There's no reason we can't have our regular two meetings. If someone needs to take some time off, they can do that. They can skip a meeting if they need to. We all have to miss meetings from time to time. It is, I know some of you have said, well, we're trying to protect our staff. Well, I think our staff for many years has had two meetings a month, and it works well for our planning for our department. And I realize that people have run this by the departments, and the department head said, no, we can live with it. Of course, they're going to say that to us. That's the way they are. But I think that we ought to stay with the schedule. We shouldn't drop this meeting. And I won't support the amendment. Now, everyone can say, well, that's Mike Lane. Everybody else can agree otherwise. But this is very serious. This is part of our job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Any other comments? I have Greg Meese and then Ann Foreman.
Yes. So this is, again, just a point of information or clarity. If we were to need to add a meeting to the legislature, what would the process be to do that in the event that there was something around that time that required us to meet? How would we go about doing that?
It's a good question. Amanda, would you like to answer that?
Well, so the chair of the legislature can call a meeting at any time. And it is spelled out in the rules of the legislature. I don't remember exactly which rule, but if something came up that we needed to schedule a special meeting, the chair could do that. I don't know. I mean, I guess we could bring a resolution forward that says we want to add such and such meeting, you know, to whatever date. So, and we could do that as a group as well, if we wanted to.
Thank you. From my perspective, I think that just July 5th is just a really bad day, especially with the holiday. I'll support the amendment, but I think it's, important to recognize that we still have the option to add in the event that we do need to have additional meeting added at that time.
Very good. Thank you, Greg. Ann Corman?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I am in favor of, removing for now the meeting of July 5th. I was one of the ones a few years ago, one of the ones, I don't know if I was the first one, but to bring this up because, we see the state, federal government, even local municipalities that take out meetings. There's other governments that have sessions where they're able to do all their work. And so I brought up the question, do we have to have all these meetings? And, if we do, if we need to meet for something, then we do. But if we can if us and plus, you know, there's often at least a dozen, 15 or more staff members that come to our meetings. So if we can do the work in between, you know, we tried it for a couple of years and it seems to be working. So I will support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Any other comments? Okay, I see none. So what we're voting on right now is the amendment to remove July 5th, the meeting for July 5th. Any questions? Okay, I want to make sure everyone knows what we're voting on because this can get pretty confusing at times. If there's ever a question, if you're ever confused about what we're voting on, please raise your hand. I want everyone to feel comfortable. Okay, let's do a roll call vote.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
No.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corp?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
No.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
It's 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay, that passes. Now we are back to the original resolution, Resolution F. Oh, sorry, that's wrong.
B.
Sorry, B.
And that's with the change of the March meeting to the 17th.
Yes.
Okay.
Any questions or comments? Okay, let's vote on the resolution with the changes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much. Amanda, do you have anything else to report?
Nope, that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Amanda? Okay, I see none. Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Chair Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have not met since our last legislative meeting. The next meeting we do have is Monday, January 24th at 1:30. And since Dave McKenna is no longer on the legislature, I'm hoping that Randy Brown will be able to take his place for that meeting. And okay, great. And then I have one resolution. Go ahead. This is resolution number 10518. It's E on the schedule here. Authorizing a contract with Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District to provide interim financial assistance to support and conduct conservation related activities. And the purpose in this, we've done this for at least several years, is that we kind of help float them some money while they're waiting for grant money to come in so they can keep going on their projects.
Very good. Ann Corman?
And we have to redo this each year.
Okay. Any questions for Ann? Mike Lynn?
Seconded.
Okay. Seconded by Mike Lynn. And any questions or comments? Okay, I see none. Let's vote.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Anything else, Ann?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next, moving on to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have an extremely light agenda on tap for next Monday at 3 p.m. We will be missing Martha and Glenn, so I am hoping that Greg and Lee will join us. Do not be lulled into thinking that all of our agendas are this late, because they are not. Anyway, and the other thing I would like to mention to everyone is that it would appear that we're going to have an expanded budget committee meeting on the 24th, which is a Monday. And that is for the purpose of reaching a consensus on some clarifications to the design of our community recovery fund program, so that we can furnish those clarifications to the respondents to the RFP that we sent out towards the end of last year. If any of the new folks have any questions about what that looks like or what the history is, please feel free to ask me. You can also talk to Amanda or Dan
and Henry
just to get some background. Thank you.
And just to clarify, that will be the 24th at 5:30.
Yes.
Mike?
Are you anticipating taking any action?
Well, that's a good question. I think, yes, we're going to have to take some action because the whole point is...
My question is, if it's an EBC meeting, you could... It's a committee action. It's not a action of the legislature. You'd need a special legislature meeting.
I don't know that this is going to be in the form of a resolution, Mike. I think it's more, we left the design of this program really amorphous because at that point, I think my perception was everybody was tired. And we didn't think that we were going to be able to reach agreement on details. And we also were cognizant of the fact that we would be having five new legislators on board by the time we were actually handing out grants, and they ought to have a say in what happens during their tenure. So for all of those reasons, we didn't very clearly define the scope and design of the program, and as a consequence, the RFP responses that we got were all over the place. You know, if Lisa would care to chime in on this, you know, if I'm getting it wrong. So now we have bids that range, you know, over a range of $1.4 million. So something needs to be nailed down for these bidders so that they can understand what it is exactly we're asking them to do and how much they would charge us to do that. I'm perfectly willing to hear any input from Lisa or Amanda or Dan or Henry, because they're the folks that are the most directly involved with this.
Amanda Chimkin?
Yeah, I think what we realized when we met with the small committee, which are the people that you just said, plus administration folks, is that we weren't really comparing apples to apples, because the I think there were four consultants who they were giving us different things. And so we had questions and we said, well, let's go back to this one and get clarification. But then we thought, well, there's other things for, you know, this one over here that we need clarification on. So maybe we need clarification for all of them. So I think we felt like, you know, we came up with these sort of basic questions, which Lisa sent to Leslin, who sent, eventually it came to the, you know, out in email. And Dan, I think, ended up clarifying, you know, there's these basic questions that we have to answer. So my feeling, and I guess the feeling of the others in the room, was that we need to have 14 legislators and sit down and say, you know, here's the question. I think we kind of have to vote on it because the majority would, you know, make the decision. I don't know what
consensus, I think.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be like a resolution that would then come through the legislature. It's just making decisions. So then we can then go back to each of the consultants and say, here's more specifics for you. Now you give us more specifics. Otherwise, there was no way to sort of narrow down
what these people were offering us. So that's my explanation.
But Lisa has her hand up.
Yeah.
Lisa Holmes.
Hi, yes, thanks. And I'm sorry, I can't turn my video on. It says it's being blocked by the host. So I don't know why that is. But I agree with everything that's said. I don't know the technicalities of whether we would need a resolution coming out of that meeting to, oh, here we go. Thank you, host. There, thank you. I don't know whether we'd need a resolution to take the action, to provide the clarification that if it's provided at that meeting based on your input, that's something I would defer to Kathy or Bill on. But really, we're just looking to clarify those questions that we delineated in the email that I believe went out to all of the legislators, and we can resend if necessary in advance of that meeting.
Are there any other questions or comments? Henry?
Yes, yes. I think Mike's point is that we need to vote on something. We need to, again, take the input of the new legislators and take all the non-inputs and put them together and decide something. Now, whether it's a resolution or something else.
Henry, we can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, so we need to vote on
something. We can't hear you.
We need to vote on something to make a decision.
Sorry,
and
we
so
can't hear you. Oh.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, we need to vote on something to make a decision. And the expanded budget, you know, that's not all 14 of us, is it? And
it
so
would
we
be have, actually.
Expanded budget is the committee of the whole. I think that perhaps the solution to this would simply be that whatever consensus we were able to reach on clarifying the RFP conditions at the expanded budget committee meeting, could then be consolidated into a resolution that we could pass at our next legislative meeting. Does
okay.
that address the concerns?
Yes.
Amanda?
I guess I'm just not sure that we need a resolution. I mean, if we do, we do, but like, we need to have, I mean, I think we need to vote on the answers to these questions, but we, like, we're not, I don't know. I would defer to others, but I feel like these are just questions we need to answer so then we can go back to the consultants.
But I think some people would feel more comfortable
okay.
if we formalized this as a resolution. So
sure.
that avenue is open to us.
Dan Klein?
Any harm in changing it to a special legislature meeting?
Kathy says yes.
That would be appropriate.
I'll take care of some of these.
Okay.
But then we have to have a resolution prepared in advance. So.
And there are, how many questions would you say that we're going to have to discuss? It's a handful, right?
Oh, koodles.
No, we narrowed it down to
okay.
like five or six, I think.
But
okay.
then there were expansions on this
yeah.
in subsequent emails. So I think we're looking at maybe a dozen details that we need to nail down. I guess we can talk about this some more, Kathy.
I think that would be a good idea. So if we do have a special committee meeting, switch the expanded budget to special committee, we do have a legislature meeting February 1st. So we could have the discussion and then pass any resolution February 1st.
Right, and we would have a week to, yeah.
So let's continue the conversation and plan on, we will have an email once we figured out what route we're going to go. Keep the 24th, though, as a date at 5:30 for a special committee meeting.
Randy Brown.
I did read a lot of the information that Deborah and other people wrote about that. I saw some of the questions. It'd be helpful for me as a new legislature to see some compilation of all those questions together. And also, you talked about buckets for this dispersion of funds over time. If you'd explain to me what those buckets are a little bit, a little background information so I can get there and we can get there and understand a little more.
You know what might be helpful is if Deborah were to meet, and I don't even know if this is allowed, maybe we ask Bill Troy, if Deborah were to meet with the new legislators and give them a little bit of a tutorial on the ARPA funds recovery, because this has been hours and hours of discussion, and there's a lot of background here. Bill Troy, I don't know if he's still on.
Yes, he is.
Would that be an appropriate way for us to convey the information to the new legislators?
Problem is, once you get above three people, you have a problem. I think you'd have to have a special session of the committee, and then they can invite all of the people to come in who need to learn more about this.
Can we make it part of the onboarding? I mean, I would be glad to do an onboarding session with the new folks.
So maybe you could try that. Yeah, you could try that with the onboarding.
Call it an onboarding
here's
session.
Here's an example of one thing we're doing, but you are speaking about, but you won't be taking any votes at that meeting. You will
no,
be
and it's just a history lesson, Bill.
I'm sorry?
It would just be a history lesson, I think. And to address Randy's concern, I think that probably in advance of the meeting, Lisa and I at least will get together and, you know, maybe Amanda, you could join us and we could put together a list of the questions that would provide a framework for our discussion at this meeting on the 24th.
You could do that. You're not going to take a vote on anything because you don't have the quorum.
Yeah, it would be purely informational and there would be no votes. It would be a way for our new legislators to get background information of the actions that we've taken over the past year.
I think the idea of the onboarding works.
Or I could just give you the YouTube links to hours and hours of fascinating meetings, whichever you prefer.
Okay, so we will plan on doing an onboarding session for the recovery funds with a history lesson by Deborah and Lisa. Okay. Ann Corman?
I just wanted to make sure it was clear and that everybody is for the special, well, the expanded budget meeting on the 24th, that's for everybody.
Yeah.
Expanded. I just wanted to make sure all the new legislators knew. Okay.
And hopefully the executive order will be extended and people can tune in via Zoom if they need to. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Deborah, did you have any more announcements for budget?
I think I'm done.
Okay. Any questions for Doug? Ann Corman.
I have a question for you. Let's see. One of these papers here. Did you note, or did you want to say about the on page 9 about the tentative dates for the budget retreat and explain what that is? Because I know that's sometimes kind of confusing. When I first heard budget retreat, I was thinking like a whole weekend thing or something.
Good point, Annie. Thank you. We usually kick off our budget planning season well in advance of when the legislature actually goes through the process of expanded budget committee hearings or meetings in September and October, because basically administration works on our budget all year long. That's one of the major things that they do. And so we have what we call a retreat, which is basically just a meeting and a presentation by the county administrator of what the drivers are for the budget process for the coming year, what the, you know, socioeconomic conditions are, what it's going to cost to maintain effort. We've got a maintenance of effort number, which could be a percentage by which we might have to increase the levy. And in order to continue to provide the services that we are already providing with the staff that we already have, factoring in any contracted for increases in pay. Am I getting all this right, Lisa? And basically what comes out of that meeting is ideally an agreement among all of us as to what our target's going to be in terms of a levy increase. And that target enables admin to go forward and start preparing a budget that will be presented to us. And I can never remember if it's the recommended budget or what it's called, but it's basically the administrator's budget. And then we go from there with our budget hearings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the over target requests. And in any event, that meeting usually takes place at the end of April, and it's called the budget retreat, but it is not a weekend retreat. If we could get Dan to cook for it, we might make it a weekend. But
we used to.
Yeah. Anyhow, so that's what it is. Thanks for reminding me, Annie.
Any questions for Deborah? Did she just scare away the new people?
That budget starts in April.
She scared
April.
It's not that bad. Mostly we just listen.
Okay. Thank you, Deborah. Next committee is Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Chair Henry Grandison.
Yes, we haven't met since December 1st, and we at the end of January. I'm open for questions.
Okay. Any questions for Henry? I see none. Thank you, Henry. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Mike Sigler, Vice Chair.
So Housing and Economic Development, we met at the end of December. It was a very nice send-off for Martha, who was chair of that committee. A lot of good accomplishments for the IDA, and you know, we did our labor policy, which went through. That was a long time coming, like almost a decade. So the labor policy basically, we set a percentage of local labor who's going to be working on projects that are funded in part through the IDA, not funded, but tax incentives and things like that. So that was a big move for economic development. We also talked about a new manufacturer that is going to be going into Dryden, which is very exciting, steel bed frames. The IDA has given some incentives or approved some incentives for that. So that is certainly a big change for Dryden. It's going to go in the old Wilcox Press building. I don't know if you know where that is, over on 13. But a major investment by them could end up growing into several lines. And we're talking about like 88 employees. It's a remarkable change for that area, something that's laid dormant for so long. And will mean jobs that are, you know, high paying or good paying, that aren't just a part of Cornell. Not that there's anything wrong with working for Cornell, but you know, it's hard to put all your eggs in one basket. And this is certainly another basket and a basket that could grow. So if any of the other committee members want to pipe in, I know there was a lot going on at that meeting. So
any questions for Mike? Okay. I see none. Thank you, Mike.
No problem.
Boy, who thought Mike Sigler would be chairing two committees this evening?
Again, always the air surprise.
Hey, this time
years ago he was chairing the whole legislature.
And what a fine month that was.
County will never be the same. Okay, we have already gone through the individual member filed resolution. Next is the minutes of the previous meeting, December 21st, 2021. If I could have a mover, please. Moved by Amanda, seconded by Deborah Dawson. And any questions or comments? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black? 15 ayes, 0 noes. That passes. Thank you. And if I could have a motion to go into executive session for contract negotiations, and we are not expected to take action. Moved by Deborah Dawson, seconded by Travis Brooks. And let's do a roll call.
Yes. Right there now.
All right. Travis Brooks.
Yes.
Randy Brown.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yes.
Henry Granison.
Yes.
Rich John.
Yes.
Dan Klein.
Yes.
Ann Corman.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Yes.
Greg Mezzi.
Yes.
Veronica Pillar.
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff. Yes. Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Shauna Black.
Yes.
14, 0 noes.
Okay. We are going to take about 5 minutes and the camera's off.